keeping you current on all things criminal. This is Crime Feed. Crime Feed with Darren Kevinoki and Lonnie Coombs.
Welcome to Investigation Discovery's Crime Feed podcast. I'm Darren Kevinoki.
And I'm Lonnie Coombs.
And we are covering the ripped from the headlines criminal cases that everyone is talking about. And we have some fantastic ones this week. I guess, Lonnie, kick it on off.
You know, Darren, the very first case we have is all over social media right now, and it's just getting bigger as the days go by. This is the case of Sandra Bland, a 33-year-old African-American woman who died in custody. I'm sure you've heard about it. This woman had just...
Wait, I'm sorry. Another African-American dies in police custody?
Yes. And this one has a lot of suspicious aspects to it. That's why people keep talking about it. She had just moved from Texas to Chicago for a new job at her alma mater. She had been pulled over for a routine traffic stop, just improper signaling of a lane change. It should not have been a big deal. This was last Friday. She ends up getting arrested for allegedly assaulting the police officer who was trying to arrest her. Now, there was a videotape taken by a bystander. This alleged assault's not on the videotape. She's in custody. By Monday morning at 9 a.m., her dead body is found in her cell. Police officers are saying that she died, that it was a self-inflicted asphyxiation, essentially a hanging. But family and friends are saying this is absolutely not Sandra Bland. She couldn't have done this.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of reason to be skeptical, though, that this was a woman who had a lot to live for, right?
Absolutely. She had a brand new job. She was excited. She had talked to her family once she got into custody. They were making plans to bail her out. Her job was supposed to start this Wednesday. So why would she do this?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to me that there's a lot of righteous skepticism about law enforcement activity lately, and this is another prime example. And of course, is there anybody who's shocked by the idea that law enforcement comes out and says, oh, it appears to be a suicide, but yet we don't have any real details about that?
Well, and the type of suicide, it's supposedly hanging, which is a hard thing, I think, for a coroner to prove whether it was self-inflicted or whether someone else did it to her, unless there's other types of injuries to her body. Now, the DA has already come out and said, I don't see any evidence that would show this is anything but a suicide. However, the investigation has been turned over to the Texas Rangers now. So some people are saying, well, there's some hope. It's some independent eyes looking at this.
Yeah, but okay. So Lonnie, so you're a former prosecutor, mm-hmm. and I know this because you kicked my ass in court a few times,
or
whatever happened, or I don't know, it's all a blur. But but in terms of prosecuting law enforcement officers, I mean, what could this be? Could this be a negligent homicide?
Yeah.
Could this be a possible murder case? I mean, what?
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about a dead body, you're talking about either whether it's accidental or there's, you know, negligence for a manslaughter, or even if it's an intentional killing, that would be a murder case. And I'll tell you, not only would it be hard to get the evidence from the coroner on this as far as intent, but you would have to essentially have police officers as your witnesses. And you know that blue line that we all talk about, how difficult it is to cross, especially if there's a potential of murder charges being filed against a fellow police officer. I think it's going to be really hard for them to get any type of evidence.
Yeah, but the thing that's just so striking to me is that this is a woman who seemingly had everything to live for, mm-hmm. right? All this exciting stuff going on in her life. She's pulled over for this innocuous traffic stop. It's not like she's going to be facing life in prison for
right.
murder. She's not a fugitive on a run.
It's a traffic ticket.
It's a traffic ticket. And some of that stop, and we don't have video of the stop itself, but there's a bystander who took video of the aftermath, right?
Mm-hmm.
As she's laying on the ground and officers are getting her handcuffed. And what was interesting to me in watching that is that you heard an officer saying to the bystander journalist, get out of here. So, you know, not wanting
right.
another situation where yet one more citizen is taking real-time video or photographs of officers behaving badly. And really, it smacks to me of that Walter Scott case where mm-hmm. we have that the perhaps murder charges have been filed and that the planting of the taser or Eric Garner. And I think there's a bigger issue here. I mean, obviously, this is an enormously important case and this
yeah.
woman has lost her life and under what appear to be suspicious circumstances. But I think we've got larger societal issues at play about about the police needing to get comfortable with the idea that when they're engaged in police activity in a public place, they're going to be recorded.
And bystanders need to know their rights. There was, apparently from what you can see from that video, no reason why that bystander could not take that video of what was going on. They were far enough away that they could safely videotape it, but the police officer was telling them, leave.
Exactly. Yeah. So if that's the case, then why is the cop telling them to get out of here unless there's something suspicious going on? And this was a woman who had a big platform and had been very critical about police activity before. So more to come on this story, and we're certainly going to be covering this. I guess there's another case that may not immediately seem as societally important as that one, but this is about one of my favorite topics, which is the selfie. And I've been criticized for taking, matter of fact, I'd like to take a selfie right now if somebody could hand me a camera. But there are cases now being reported where doctors in delivery rooms are taking selfies of themselves posing next to women and their most intimate areas.
Yes.
As they're in the process of giving birth. And some of these are as there is crowning going on.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I don't think this is presenting the child with some kind of a headpiece.
I think this
is crowning in a very, very different context.
Yes.
Some of them have been done during cesarean sections.
Which means the woman is probably unconscious at that point.
Wait a second. My daughter was born by cesarean section. Mm-hmm. My wife was definitely conscious during the entire proceeding. You know,
some
it was interesting. For me, the thing that was most jarring about that entire episode was they first get her all set up for the C-section, and then they usher me in the room, and they neglected to advise me that her internal organs are all going to be out on display on this tray right there.
See, you men, you're wimps. You don't understand what we go through. And instead, these male doctors are taking a moment while the women are in the midst of this traumatic event to take a picture.
The most glorious event in the course of a person's life is bringing a new life into the world. Maybe these doctors, and look, people are outraged.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely up in arms about these doctors engaged in this kind of, what is it, narcissistic behavior?
At least.
Do you agree with it? As a woman, Lonnie, do you?
Yeah, women, I mean, here you are, it's your private parts in your most vulnerable time when you're trying to focus on bringing this new life safely out, and here's somebody not only taking the picture of your private parts, but stopping what they're supposed to be doing, which is assisting you in this birth, to take a picture.
But, you know, Lonnie, could
it be... And they're posting these pictures!
Okay, but hang on. So, obviously, the law has a remedy. If a person's privacy has been invaded, then you can take somebody to court and file a lawsuit, an invasion of privacy lawsuit. But could this instead be pride in workmanship?
Oh, please.
That they're documenting the job that they've done, perhaps even to thwart a malpractice lawsuit to show that they have done their job and done it well?
Wow, you are really stretching now.
Lawyers, I'm not stretching as much as that kid does during a crowning.
Okay.
What the hell is that?
Well, I'll tell you what. I would tell every one of these women who've been violated so horribly to sue, because there was another lawsuit recently where a male victim who was having a colonoscopy happened to have his recorder still going on because he was trying to record the doctor's instructions. And as soon as he's put underneath, they start talking, calling him a wimp, calling him stupid, questioning his sexuality.
They made some unkind remarks
towards
their unconscious patient.
And he sued them for defamation and medical malpractice, and the jury awarded him $500,000. And that's just for verbal abuse. If you can imagine these pictures being posted, and the pictures never go away.
I'll take that trade any day. By the way, when I go in for, I want to put my doctor on notice. You can insult me all you want as long as I can cash in for that $500,000 when it's over. But so clearly people are really upset about what appears to be the doctor breaching their medical duties. But I would caution.
Use the word breach. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Thank you for pointing out my unintentional pun. Yes. But people are really outraged about this. And at the same time, I think we've got to blame the real culprit in this mess, which is Kim Kardashian, you know, the selfie and this narcissism poor that is Kim. So pervasive. Well, let me ask you, Lonnie, on Amazon's Christmas list last year in all of their sales activity, what was the number one item that was sold?
The selfie stick.
That's right, because it's important to take a selfie. Although the one, there's one other issue that I think people are sort of ignoring or moving right past here. One of these doctors who put up the selfie he came along with some great quotes. He says, "Lady, I can deliver your baby, but first let me take a selfie," which I think is a play on a song, right? Isn't there? There's a famous song about taking a selfie. But I love that he's bragging that his team can give women vaginas that are, and I'm quoting now, brand new, like a car with 0 kilometers on the clock.
Okay.
And I think we can all agree that this is a clue towards the biggest problem we face, which is the metric system. Why isn't it 0 miles? Why is it 0 kilometers?
No, it points to the fact that this is also has this whole misogynistic, you know, derogatory towards women, treating women and their bodies like, you know, a little spectacle to put out on a picture. But we're going to move on from that because obviously you and I are never going to agree on that one. Let's move on to the next case.
I think what we have here, Lonnie, is you really can't criticize about body parts unless you own them. So clearly in the battle of who can say what, women do get the last word on this.
You get to say nothing about this.
And if it was my wife or daughter, I would be violently upset.
Okay, moving on. The next story is actually, people are seeing it's somewhat similar to that movie and book that came out a few years ago that was so hot called Gone Girl. This was a really strange story that keeps getting stranger as time goes on. There was a woman named Dennis Huskins who was kidnapped, allegedly, as they were saying, back on March 23rd. And she was with her boyfriend, Aaron Quinn, at home. And he says that they woke up to a bright light in their faces. There were two kidnappers who bound and drugged them. And then they took his girlfriend and left a ransom note saying that they needed $8,500. 2 days later, he finally reported this to the police 12 hours after that.
2 days? Okay.
12 hours later, he reported to the police. The police responded in mass. They had over 100 search teams going after and looking for her. And 2 days later, she was found in Huntington Beach, unharmed, at her, I guess her father had a home there. And there she was, and she called the police and said, "Hey, the kidnappers dropped me off here. I'm unharmed." They said, "We're coming to talk to you." She said, "Okay." And after an initial conversation, then she decided she didn't want to cooperate anymore, and she wasn't going to talk to them. After that, it quickly turned negative from the police. The police said this was a goose chase. They said there are a lot of suspicious things. They didn't believe the victims. They said, why did the boyfriend wait 12 hours to report this? She's not harmed.
Now the police are skeptical about her story, if I'm hearing
you
right.
Well, they were. Now, the next wrinkle, they've actually arrested someone, a suspect, in connection with this, that they say they believe committed this kidnapping, and that actually had been in custody on another similar home invasion, where they were investigating that home invasion. They saw some similarities to this case. The law enforcement agencies got together and they said, oh my goodness, this is the guy. And now they've arrested him as a suspect in the kidnapping, and they're charging him with this kidnapping.
So, and they're calling this like the Gone Girl case. So let me see if I get this straight. So this woman disappears under some mysterious circumstances, and the boyfriend is late to report it. Finally, the police, of course, invest a huge amount of resources into it. And then afterwards, her behavior is so squirrely that the police are then questioning whether she was kidnapped in the first place or whether this was all something that was manufactured to look like something else.
That's why they're calling it Gone Girl, because if you remember from that movie, it was essentially a whole thing set up by the girl. It was a hoax.
Right.
But in this case, we've now moved on from that. The police are now saying, uh-oh, not a hoax. We actually have a suspect that we're now going to charge with all of this. So now they are stuck with, well, as a defense attorney, you know, Darren, they're going to be jumping up and saying, wait a minute, police officers, you were saying just a few weeks ago this entire thing was a hoax.
Right. Well, that's where I was initially going, which is this is so bizarre in the sense that if I'm the defense lawyer now for this person who's been accused of being involved in the case, My first piece is, well, wait, this was so ridiculous. Immediately, you suspected that she was the real culprit. Now you're coming after my guy?
Yeah.
I mean, that just screams to me reasonable doubt. I think it makes it very tough to secure a conviction under these kinds of circumstances.
Yeah, well, it does sound like they have some strong evidence that they found in the possession of this guy that is linked to the actual kidnapping of...
let's hear that alleged evidence, because what it sounds to me, Lonnie, is that police are pissed off that perhaps they wasted all these search and seizure rescue teams and all of the resources that they did on this case, and now they're trying to get some get back.
Yeah. Well, in the car, in this suspect's car, and he's already been involved in another home invasion that's similar to this, but in his car, there was a navigation system that actually had the Huntington Beach address where this girl ended up, and they found a pair of goggles, which was similar to the way the victims described that they were blindfolded with goggles when they were taken, and there's a long blonde hair in it, the same color as this victim's Denise Huskins. So if they're able to tie that together with DNA, I know, Darren, you as a defense...
Who doesn't carry goggles and different colors of hair with them everywhere they go? You never know when that stuff can become useful, Lonnie.
This is going to be a great case. But believe me, there's definitely a lot for the defense to argue. But the prosecution, I think, is going to have a strong case.
Well, it seems to me that the defense is going to have an awful lot to talk about, too, which is why I'm looking forward to the trial.
That'll be a great trial.
But the guy that they now like for this case, isn't he a Harvard-educated lawyer?
Yes, he is.
Goodness.
Although now he's, I don't know if he's disbarred, but he doesn't practice and he's filed for bankruptcy. He's fallen on hard times.
Wow. Well, you know who else has had some rough times lately? There are these kids, and they're back in the Midwest, I believe. They've been, there's been this huge family trouble. There's been a really ugly divorce with a long and ugly custody battle.
Five years.
And there, nothing new about that, right? Mm-hmm. This is sadly something that happens all too often. But as part of that dispute, when they were in the family court, there were three kids who at the time were aged 9, 10, and 14 who were ordered by the judge to meet their father and have lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids, being smart alecky, refused. Being defiant. They said, "No, Judge, we'll RSVP no for that lunch invitation. We're not going."
With good reason.
Well,
with good reason.
Allegedly with good reason.
The kids are not just being defiant. I mean, they said, "Look, we've seen our dad beat our mother. We don't want to be with him." So
what the judge did in response to that RSVP no to her lunch invitation, or her strong suggestion in the form of a court order that the family reconcile by having this lunch, she says, "Okay, you're not going to lunch. I got a better idea. How about juvenile hall?" And she sentences them to spend time in juvenile hall, not just a little bit of time, not just go back into lockup for 20 minutes as an attention-getting device. No, how about until you reach the age where you can vote?
18. And before she sentences them to that, she says that they were not behaving like normal human beings, and she likened them to Charles Manson for having the audacity to avoid their dad. So she has her own little issues. And Darren, you and I know, having worked with juveniles, the juveniles who actually go to juvenile hall are the worst of the worst. Most of them, when they're actually committing crimes, get sent back home on probation over and over again. It's usually the ones who've actually killed somebody who actually go into juvenile hall, and to be sentenced until they're the age of 18, you really have to have committed a very serious felony or killed somebody. That's where these kids are going, seven-year-old.
Wait, I'm sorry. Are you saying that the judge made the wrong call,
yes,
Lonnie? I'm having a difficult time following
this. This call is so ridiculous. I cannot even imagine what she was thinking. I think she was, out of her mind to do this, and very unfair to these kids. Not only that, she ordered that they not be able to stay together, nor can they see their mother.
Well, while they're in juvenile hall, because she doesn't trust these guys.
They're
Who knows what kind of escape plan they'd be hatching.
Excuse me, the whole thing about family court is to help that family stay together.
Exactly.
She just tore them apart.
But the whole idea about family court is you're trying to help families reconcile. And why are we just going to listen to these kids who are young, who don't understand necessarily how the world works? And father's rights are important too. So here's a judge saying, "Hey, look, kids, we know that there's been this long and torturous divorce procedure, but we need you to reconcile with your dad."
Yeah.
And instead of saying, "Okay, you know best, honorable robed one," these kids who are 9, 10, and 14, are we going to trust a 9-year-old to make these kinds of decisions about what's in their best interest? The whole point of the judge is that the judge knows best about what's in the best interest of the child.
Maybe she doesn't. I agree that dads should have rights, and I agree that in the best circumstances, there's interaction involvement by the father. But let me just point out to you that when this judge sentenced his 3 children to juvenile court until they were 18 years old, the dad could have said, no, I don't want them to go. They've learned their lesson. Let them out. He did not. What did he do? He left to go to Israel for 2 weeks, leaving his 3 children in this juvenile detention center. What kind of father is that? Does he care enough about his kids to actually worry about them? No, he goes off on his trip to Israel. That right there tells me everything that judge was oblivious to on what the kids were trying to say, which this father does not understand how to father.
Well, Israel's a beautiful country. I mean, there's a lot to recommend it from a tourism standpoint. But I will say, you know, it is like the cradle of humanity. That's where, regardless of religion, that's where humanity all springs from.
And like all defense attorneys, you are totally going down a tangent to avoid the issue.
Well, look, I mean, but this is about contempt. This is about defiance. This is about these kids needing to learn a lesson that rather than them at the ripe old ages of 9, 10, and 14, rather than them getting a chance to say, no, judge, we know best and here's how it's going to go, they were righteously held in contempt for thumbing their nose at the authority of the court. And by the way, the judge did allow them at least one visitor while they were in juvenile hall. The order did say that the father could visit.
That's right. The father who left for Israel and is not even around to visit them. Okay, let's move on.
You can't you can't trust kids to make the best decisions for themselves.
Sometimes you can.
Here's what. You go to a 9-year-old and say it's time to eat, and you can choose. You can eat this plate of spinach, or you can eat these chocolate chip cookies. You come back hours later, spinach is still there, those cookies are gone.
We're talking about an abusive father who's been beating their mother. I think these children know.
They've been listening to mom stories.
We're moving on now.
The guy who's the subject of this story may be the number one contender for the world's worst Samaritan. You've heard of Good Samaritans, of course. This guy, exactly the opposite. So Paul Pelton is his name, and he was arrested earlier this week when he stopped to videotape a car crash that happened when a Honda Accord jumped some railroad tracks, rammed into a house. This guy comes running out, not to help anybody, but instead to take video of the carnage. And there were two teenage boys that are trapped inside that car. And instead of helping them out of the car or doing anything to intervene, this guy actually, trying to get a better angle to shoot from, he opens a back door of the car and he leans in, not to help anybody, but to film those kids. And then he walks around, he opens the front door, and he continues recording. And at the end of this, one of these kids is badly injured and the other one passes.
Yeah, I think this is outrageous. Look, other people were trying to save these kids. The car was on fire. Obviously, it was very clear that these kids needed help and the other bystanders were trying to get in there. And instead, this guy is not just videotaping from a safe distance. He's actually getting in the car, getting in the way of people trying to help the kids. What does he do with the video?
Yeah, he tries to sell it.
He posts it on Facebook. First of all, how would you like to be the parents of these kids, the one who died? Would you like to see that videotape on Facebook? And then he tries to sell it to media stations. So I don't even get where was his moral conscience here in doing this. I mean, they knew that one person died, the other one's in critical condition, may still pass away. After all this, after there's outrage, he apologizes, but come on. This is ridiculous.
He's sorry that he's taking this public heat. And what's interesting is law enforcement authorities are just beside themselves, which is why he was charged with this crime of trespassing onto a crime scene, which is really the police scrambling for anything that they can find to charge this guy with just because they want to get him, as righteously they should.
Which I agree with, but wait a minute, Darren. You're the one who's always telling me, look, bystanders should be taking these videotapes. This is great for the, you know, for prosecution. Yeah,
public integrity.
Exactly.
Well, yes.
So here's this guy taking this video, and yet now all of a sudden you're outraged.
But I am outraged because here's the difference. It's one thing to be a bystander that takes video, and it's another thing to actually be up in that whole accident scene, and then you're now doing doing something to change the landscape of that scene. And from a legal standpoint, and it's important for people to know, if you're going to be recording police officers that are engaged in the performance of police duties, as long as you're in a public place and you are not interfering with them doing their police function, mm-hmm. then you are okay to videotape it, and police should realize that and comport themselves accordingly. But when you get into this accident scene, this is where I have another problem. And the United States is alone in this sense, in that, and I think it's the lawyers that screw everything up. Because you, generally speaking, when you come on an accident, you do not have any affirmative obligation to help, with a few rare exceptions. So if I'm in a special relationship with somebody, like a husband, wife, or a parent, child, then I have an affirmative obligation to help. If I'm the one that caused the accident, I have an affirmative obligation to help. So if I push you in the lake and you can't swim, mm-hmm. I have an affirmative obligation to help fish you out. Or if I have a certain employment relationship, like I'm a lifeguard and you're in that lake, I have an affirmative obligation to help. Other than that, you're allowed to stand by as a bystander and let the carnage unfold. But this guy engaged in such horrific bad taste. Yeah. That's why the cops want to get him.
Not just bad taste. I mean, he literally put these kids in more danger because he's climbing into the car when people who actually want to try and save these kids could have been climbing into the car. So I am so happy that the prosecution got creative and found something to charge him with. And I hope that people learn a lesson from this one. Yeah, so indeed. This is a real sad. Okay, now we're going on to something that we call cases we're keeping our eyes on.
Uh-huh. So, I've got four of them. Yeah. Four eyes to
four
keep
eyes
on.
Okay. Well, I have my two eyes on a very fascinating case that just broke today, and I was all over it when I saw it. There's a website called Ashley Madison.
I'm feigning ignorance. I mean, what's that site all about?
Well, let me tell you, Darren, because I'm sure you have no clue what it is. It's a social networking site that actually allows married people to have affairs. And they have the motto, life is short, have an affair. Well, apparently there is a group, a hacking group out there that does not like this site. They have hacked into the Ashley Madison database, and they have started to leak some of the user data. And they are telling Ashley Madison, look, we're going to continue to do this until you permanently take the site down. We're going to start releasing customer records, the profiles, their secret sexual fantasies, their credit card transactions, real names and addresses, on and on and on. So there are a lot of people that are very unhappy. And what I find interesting is, you know, there's been hackers who've broken into government databases, into medical databases. We've all most likely had our information, you know, violated. And yet this is the one.
No one cares about that.
Everybody's jumping in to go after those hackers. And there's another thing.
Yeah, can you see those FBI agents,
yes,
like beads of sweat forming on their forehead?
And
we've got to shut this down.
There's over 37 million members, supposedly, of this website. That's what they're saying. I can't imagine that, but apparently that's a lot of people out there sweating this out.
Do you have your actual photo on your profile, or how does that work?
I don't know. Dare you ask like I would know. Thank you. Meanwhile,
just want to see how you'd answer that question. Yeah. I have no idea what that site looks like.
There's also one other thing, too, that Ashley Madison could be in trouble with, and that is that they give their users the option once they decide to go off the website. They say they'll wipe everything clean. They'll delete all their information for an extra fee, and people pay that fee. Well, apparently, they didn't really wipe it clean. So all of these people who think they're safe are actually all of their information's out there, too.
I think there's a great lesson here that the price tag for our misbehavior is never what we calculate it to be.
Let's just assume in this day and age, there are no real secrets.
Oh, my God. Thankfully, I tell most of them. No, I think I tell pretty much all of them on myself. You know, I feel like when I'm the one that trumpets my own misbehavior, then I just feel like other people don't have, they don't have that on me. So, here's something I'm keeping my eye on, which isn't quite as fun and frivolous. Obviously, there was a horrific case that still remains in the news, the South Carolina shootings and Dylann Roof. And mm-hmm. I think one of the positive things to come out of that whole experience has been the real conversation about the Confederate flag and some of the issues of race that clearly continue to need to be addressed in our country. This case is back in the news for a couple of reasons. One, the judge did something really innovative. Normally in a high profile case, it is not uncommon in a high profile criminal case that a gag order is issued. Mm-hmm. And usually it's one side or the other saying, hey, there's some sensitive information out there and we feel like the other side's going to spill. Or use the press to influence those in the court of public opinion.
Try the case in the press.
Exactly. And this particular case, the judge ain't waiting around. And the judge has, on his own motion, issued a gag order to just shut everything down. Although he's willing to hear what other people have to say about it. And if anybody like the prosecutor, the defense, or even the press has calls for a hearing, there will be a hearing on that issue. But I thought that was very proactive and insightful of the judge to do that.
Well, yeah. And especially in this case, one of the things that the judge cited is that there might be 911 calls from the victims. Right. As the shooting was going on, you might actually hear some of the victims being killed. I mean, it's just nobody needs to hear.
Photographs of the scene.
Yes.
And yes. Yeah. And I think as much as there is certainly a right of the public to know, that there is also a right to privacy that needs to be respected.
Yes.
And so kudos to the judge for doing that as much as somebody like me or presumably like you, Lonnie, who likes to talk about this stuff. We need some material to talk about, but I think not at the cost of other people's dignity.
We don't need to, you know, traumatize the victims' families any further.
And I'm willing to sacrifice my own dignity. Yeah. I can't even pronounce the word today.
Dignity.
Dignity.
Well, and I appreciate you keeping your eyes on this case because honestly, I think a lot of people got caught up in the whole Confederate flag controversy and people aren't even focusing on what's happening to the actual shooter in the case. So the fact that you've brought that up and giving us the update on what's going on in the actual case itself, I think is important for people to know.
Well, you know me, Lonnie. I'm nothing if not sympathetic and emotionally... who am I trying to kid? Like a child. Okay, so let's actually have a little bit of fun with the dumbest criminals.
What? There are dumb criminals out there?
No. Like I say, there's no such thing as stupid questions. There's just stupid people asking questions. So it's a little competition between Lonnie and me to see who can find the dumbest criminal activity. And by the way, don't be afraid, listeners. Send me your ideas. You know how to find me.
Send them to me. Not that Darren and I aren't very competitive with each other.
Yes. Hopefully, though, and we'll just try and Scout's Honor. We'll
honor
see
system.
If we have you. Yes, the honor system. What's that they say? Honor among thieves? I don't know. Hopefully, we'll have unanimous agreement on who wins the dumbest criminal of the week award. So, Lonnie,
okay,
you first.
Yes. I think I've got a winner here.
Ladies first.
Okay. Starting, of course, with where this case is, Florida.
Oh, you
right
win.
Right there. Boom. Cha-ching. Okay. This woman is named Kateria Thomas. She's 33 years old. So, on Tuesday morning, she's driving along and she has expired tags on her car. So the police officers pull her over. As they pull her over, they pull up to the car and they see in the back seat there are three children, a one-year-old, a three-year-old, and a four-year-old. None of them are properly seatbelted in. They're just kind of bouncing around the back seat.
That's how I grew up.
Then they walk up to the front passenger seat, and in the front passenger seat, there's a full can of gas just sitting there on the passenger seat.
Oh, my God.
And then they get to the driver, Ms. Thomas herself. She is in the driver's seat. She's been driving. She smells of alcohol. And she's breastfeeding a 2-month-old baby at the same time she's driving.
Oh, my God. Give that woman an award.
She's
that is
amazing. She's a
multitasker,
right? So they get her out of the car. They give her the FSTs, as they always do. And she fails. And then she gives the great defense. She says, well, I wasn't drinking. I just ate 4 hamburgers that had whiskey on them. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Wow. Can I say in her defense, at least she wasn't smoking a cigarette while she had that gas can there.
True.
But that really takes something. Okay, I'll definitely tip my hat to that
one.
Yeah, that is a good one. I actually had kind of my own self-imposed tie for the dumbest criminal. There is an Ohio man who called police to report that his wife had committed a crime against him.
Mm-hmm.
She stole his stash of cocaine. And he called 911. Oh, because of course you don't want to call just the ordinary number. This is an urgent emergency. You need the police out there right away because his wife stole the cocaine. But believe it or not, it got worse from there. When the police came, they found that the 39-year-old man allegedly had an outstanding warrant for his arrest at the time he made that call. And of course, they found a glass pipe from which he freely admitted that he had just used to smoke marijuana. So I thought that was a pretty
That's a good one. Wait, I mean, don't tell me you're going to give me another one.
Could I? So, okay, just so this guy, kind of in the same family, this guy, his name, Jason Brown, he gets pulled over for erratic driving, which not that big of a deal, right? But except he had been arrested for that same thing 41 times before. But
41 times?
No, he'd been arrested 41 times, not just for erratic driving, for other criminal stuff too. Come on.
Okay.
He was diversification, right? But so you'd think that somebody who'd been arrested 41 times kind of had the routine down and knew how to navigate those booking questions. But when they asked him to list his occupation, drug dealer.
Well, if he's an honest criminal.
Okay, so I'm going with my first one then.
Okay. So let's see. Dumbest criminal.
Dumb. I guess if dumb.
Yeah.
So if dumb is the criteria.
I'm going to have to get. Oh, I just got a vote. Wait, I just got a vote.
Wait, from a producer, from an unbiased, neutral third party. Damn, I didn't know we had a jury we had to pay for.
It has to be Florida. Florida always wins.
Yeah, Florida wins. Damn it. All right.
Thank you.
I'm going to be now I know how to search next time. Or for all of our listeners, please help me, not Lonnie. I need her. Everybody knows that you're the smart one in the crew, Lonnie.
Yeah,
so come on. Well, I have to say that being part of Investigation Discovery's Crime Feed podcast is just, it feels so good, Lonnie. I'm just so glad to be here with you.
Me too.
So I just have to say, on behalf of my partner in crime,
Lonnie Coombs,
and of course myself, Darren Cavanocchi, thank you for listening. And remember, if you want more shocking true crime stories, watch Investigation Discovery or visit crimefeed.com.
Keeping you current on all things criminal. Crime Feed.
Crime Feed.
With Darren Cavanocchi and Lonnie Coombs.